economic data and comments from Fed Chair Janet Yellen. She told Congress an interest rate hike could come, quote, relatively soon.
And that such an increase could well become appropriate relatively soon.
Chair Yellen talked about it is appropriate to raise rates relatively soon.
If incoming data provides some further evidence of continued progress toward the committee's objectives.
It sounds like she was teeing up December.
The committee judged that there was somewhat more room for the labor market to improve.
To paraphrase President Obama, the federal government remains an ocean liner, not a speedboat.
The election outcome introduced new uncertainties.
We don't know what's going to happen.
They're going to say, where's the certainty?
You know, we will simply watch what decisions are made and factor them into our thinking going forward.
It's going to be interesting to see if the sandbox is big enough for everybody to play together.
This is the Financial Sense News Hour. Now, here's the Financial Sense News team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Well, here we are for the second week in a row. We've got the rally continuing from Election Day. The Trump rally continues in the stock market, the Dow Jones Industrial Average at record territory. Will that trend continue into the end of the year? Well, we'll be talking about that on the show. Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava. Welcome to this week's edition of the Financial Sense News Hour. In Hour 1, Craig Johnson of Piper Jaffray will be joining me. Craig has been one of the most bullish technicians we've had on the program. If you recall, we had him on at the beginning of the year, and he was talking about an S&P 500 2350. Craig is still holding on to that number. He said it may be a little bit on the high side, but he has a positive view on the markets and into next year. Craig will be joining me later on in the program. Dr. Keith Barron will be joining as we take a look at the gold market, what's ahead of it, and also what has happened to the gold mining industry itself. And Ryan Poplava will be here to talk about what moved the markets this week. All of that coming up in Hour 1.
And I'm John Loeffler. Well, it's time to take a look at Trumponomics and what may be good about it or what may be bad about it. The problem is, how much do we know about it? The markets seem to be reacting all on the basis of speculation or things which were said during the election campaign. And as everyone knows, what candidates say during election campaigns and what they actually do after they are elected are two different thing. So we'll look at what is likely to happen based on what Mr. Trump said during his campaign, such as lower tax, a lot of infrastructure building, healthcare reform, reduction of regulations, and what the impact on the markets may be, and some of the things against which Mr. Trump may be climbing uphill. Plus, you notice the markets reacted differently after the Trump election, contrary to predictions. Notice that the predictions and polls always are going wrong. Stocks went up, but what is concerned now is that bond yields are going up, and we may have some kind of an inflationary scenario on the horizon. We'll look at all of the impact of this election, at least in its potential right now, for as much as we know, coming up today on The Big Picture. And Ryan Poplava, after hitting new highs after the election for president, it looks like the stock market took a breather this week, but netted out some gains with the S&P 500 up 0.8%. The Dow Industrials were up 0.11% and the NASDAQ up 1.6%. So besides the roller coaster of a week, which we had last week, any new developments this week that we would say add to this picture or this story?
You know, you have to remember a couple of weeks ago, John, I mentioned that there's fundamentally some things that were going on under the election surface that were positive. The GDP figure was positive. Third quarter earnings was positive. It was a growth quarter for the first time in many quarters. The story was that there were some positive fundamental developments happening in all these areas. And not just that, but also an improvement in manufacturing, retail, a changing tone at central banks towards inflation from deflation, even though they're still being aggressive with accommodation. And Draghi just mentioned that recently this week. So a lot of that was eclipsed by the back and forth over the elections, which led to a decent 3-month consolidation in stocks. And, you know, we got more positive news this week with retail sales up about 0.8% in October. So that definitely added to the narrative this week. And September was revised up to 1% from 0.6. So as I said, the good fundamental things are happening, and tagging to, you know, some of the developments we had before the election, just Tuesday of last week. You know, given all the economic activity we've been seeing, and again, looking at claims drop this week, about 19,000 down to 235,000. That's like the lowest since the year 2000, I believe. You know, all of these things are contributing to the Fed futures predictions, which are pricing in right now a 95.4% chance the Fed is going to go next month. So I think the main reason that the market didn't go up maybe more based on some of these news results was that we had already moved pretty far in anticipation of, you know, what a Trump presidency could mean for the economy, what it could mean for, gosh, he's talking about eliminating specific tax brackets, simplifying the tax code, doing away with the estate planning taxes. So a lot of the stuff that Jim's been talking about, a lot of stuff we talked about in the financial strategy meeting with Paul, our financial planner, along with Jim, you know, these are things that the market is starting to price in. They did it aggressively last week. And so the consensus from my technical work and the work of others is that we're in a bullish mode now. Pro-cyclical stocks are working. However, have we moved too far too fast, both in rates and in equity prices? And that seems to be the case this week, and why we didn't, again, explode more out of the gate. And you look at the S&P 500, I think you said we hit new highs this week. We did in the Dow Industrials. Not quite yet there in the S&P. The S&P needs to get above 2193. And on an intraday basis, 2190 on a closing basis. And we actually almost touched that intraday on Friday.
Yeah, and Jim and I are going to discuss a lot of what are anticipatory Trumponomics on the big picture today. Look at some of the myth and some of the real stuff. And basically, everybody's operating on speculation, because you and I both know that candidates say one thing during election campaigns and then reality sets in and what they can really accomplish. So we'll see that. All right. So the economic news this week was great, with strong retail sales and some really positive manufacturing announcements. It seems like the response to these changes, and with a Trump administration possibly bringing fiscal stimulus to the table, animated spirits are being encouraged to take risk. So with this renewed risk tolerance, where's the pain being felt in investments? Is it in bonds then, with the rates going up?
So yeah, bond funds. So if you invest in a bond fund, those are losing value recently because they're marked to market on a daily basis. So if you're an investor in bond funds, you're going to feel more of the pain with rates going up. Rates, as I said, have also gone up pretty far, pretty fast right now in anticipation of the Fed going, in anticipation of more inflation. We got CPI numbers this week, which were higher on a year-to-year basis. I think it's up 1.6%. So all of this is coming to roost, given that we're coming up on a policy decision that's highly anticipated to go up here on rates. But, you know, higher interest rates are actually a boon for the bond investor investing really in short-term securities. And that means they'll be able to reinvest at higher yields when their bonds come due. So a long duration portfolio, a portfolio where you've got the majority of your investments are going to mature maybe 4, 5, 7, 10 years or more, where the average duration, where that is, if it's long, definitely you're going to feel more pain. But even though we have invested more of our portfolios in bonds since last year, in bonds rather, we did so with short-term maturities. So 1 to 2 years, we're going to reinvest here. In fact, we have bonds coming due now. We're happy to reinvest at these higher rates. We're not upset at all. You know, it's a good thing if you're investing on the short-term side of the curve.
If we look at what's going on in rates now, are you seeing a stock market rally being funded by the sales of investors in bonds?
That's a very good question. You know, a good source for maybe our listeners to go to, you know, look at some of the data that goes into a question like that, it's ICI.org. You know, on a weekly basis, they post changes to out and inflows in the mutual funds. I've used it for forever. And they also look at net issuance of ETFs, you know, the new establishment of ETFs. A lot of portfolios use ETFs instead of mutual funds because you can trade them on the exchange. And a lot of them have possibly lower fees. So looking at the combined long-term flows in and out of mutual funds recently, I looked at it on Wednesday when it gets issued, you know, about 7.5 billion left stocks and ETF funds, both domestic and foreign equities, as of Wednesday of last week. So it gets reported a week after the numbers they get. And about $2.7 billion entered into bonds. It's going to be very interesting to see how those results have maybe changed here, given, you know, what we've seen in the stocks, the rally in stocks and, you know, the decline in bonds. So we're not seeing that in the data yet. The data is really stale, though, compared to what we've seen in the market. So look Wednesday when they produce that data again.
Well, coming up in December, we're going to be looking at the will they or won't they raise interest rates. Anything on the docket investors should be focusing on next week, even though because of Thanksgiving weekend, it's going to be a short week for Wall Street.
Yeah, short week for Wall Street. I believe the market's closed Thursday, opens up for a half day, I think till 1 p.m. Eastern on Friday. But yeah, later this month, not many days left, there's going to be negotiations held to kind of solidify that agreement that was made to cap production for OPEC. And we've been seeing oil ticking up off of support. I mentioned it was at support 2 weeks ago. So we're seeing oil move up, and sort of in anticipation of Iran and Iraq entering in the fold and not barking too much. And even if they do, I guess, agree to cap production, are they really going to? Probably not. But it's what the market's entertaining. And that's why oil prices have moved up here a little bit. But Draghi will speak on Monday, and he had a speech this week. He's not really moving too far away from his policy decisions that have been made public at the ECB meetings. He's basically saying we still need aggressive accommodation, but he's encouraging countries to take fiscal policy steps to add some horsepower. And I think, you know, if you look broadly at the global markets, clearly it looks like they're pricing in that we may be doing some of those things that Trump mentioned to stimulate our economy. So the other markets are definitely encouraged. We've seen technically a bottom in Japan, technically a bottom in China in their equity markets. And interestingly, I think Japan intervened this week in their bond markets to keep rates low. So if they keep rates low and we keep raising our interest rates, you know, likely that's going to be a positive on the US dollar. But like we've seen over the past 2 years, that can actually be a negative, a multinational. So we may need to talk about that some more. But, you know, the other thing, John, next week, and if not over this weekend, our strategy meeting, the annual one we've done every year. We held it for clients and then we opened it to the public last year. We had another one this year, the YouTube version of it. So our slides with our audio presentation, that should be available. And that's about 3 hours of content. If, you know, our financial geeks here listening would really like to listen in onto that. That should be coming, if not live this weekend, should be very shortly. And that's discussing the business cycle and just the current fundamental backdrop of the U.S.
Yeah, you said it was discussing, not disgusting, right? Okay.
It was not disgusting. There was nothing silly about it unless we were talking about some of the things that Hillary wanted to do on long-term gains. But anyways,
okay,
that's not happening.
And obviously, we're down to the last month, I mean, because we're going to rattle through next week pretty fast, barring some great black swan all of a sudden the day before Thanksgiving. Then we have December. Possible rate raise, we don't know, will remain to be seen. And then a typical end of the year, we'll see if we repeat cycles of previous years. So anyway, Ryan Poplover, really good. Have a good Thanksgiving and see you next week.
I will be here next week, but should be here the week after that, and we can catch up and see what's going on in the markets.
That's right. You're taking time off. Forgot about that. All right. Well, still have a good Thanksgiving.
You too, and to our listeners.
You're listening to the Financial Sense News Hour at financialsense.com. To speak to Jim Poplava or his financial planning team, call us toll-free at 888-486-3939. That's 888-486-3939. We'd be glad to help you plan your customized investment portfolio.
You know, Financial Sense News Hour listeners should remember that our premium members are able to hear the weekday Financial Sense News Hour featuring interviews with top economic commentators and experts. If you're not a member, here's one of the interviews you missed this week.
When everybody else got it wrong, our next guest got the Trump win and market reaction correct earlier this year. Joining us on the show today is Jim Bianco, president of Bianco Research. And Jim, out of the many guests that we speak to on our program, you are one of the few who very early on said that a Trump win was not only a real possibility, but that it may end up just being a bullish catalyst for the market, similar to what we saw with the Brexit shock in June. Now that we can obviously all tell that the conventional wisdom got it completely wrong on both counts, both on whether or not Trump would win and the market reaction to such a win, I want to get your ideas on the general market reaction, where you think we go from here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And yes, I did think that a Trump victory was always a possibility. But I'll be honest with you, I thought that it would be a bullish catalyst for Brexit in the way that Brexit was a bullish catalyst. And what I mean by that was Brexit happened, everybody thought it was bad, they panicked, markets went down, and then the central banks panicked and said, oh, we can't have this, so let's now start printing more money, and that's what caused the big rally in markets. Now, that's what I thought would happen, was that the central banks would panic and that that would cause a big rally. In actuality, what happened was that the marketplace decided, oh, good, here comes a big reflation because Trump is going to win. He's going to cut taxes. He's going to cut regulation. He's going to be way more pro-business than either Obama or Clinton would have been. And so what you've seen is what we've been referring to as the reflation trade. Stocks have been rallying. Bonds have been rising in yield, actually soaring might be a better word for that, and the dollar has been rallying. So that everybody's now on this idea that there's going to be this infrastructure trade or this reflation trade. And even within that, you've even seen some of the way that the sectors have been performing. The financial sector has been on fire, and to a degree we have not seen since 2009. The catalyst for that has been that the Trump administration or the transition team has made it be known that they plan on tearing up the Dodd-Frank regulation bill that was passed in 2010, which is music to the financial industry's ears. And the technology sector has been a disaster at the same time. Now, there's two arguments you can give for tech. Argument one is that tech has been a source of funds. While everybody's buying basic material and manufacturing and infrastructure plays, they have to get their money from somewhere. So they're selling tech to rotate into that. The other argument you can give is a political argument, in that other than Peter Thiel, the famous venture capitalist and PayPal founder and on the board of Facebook, other than him, nobody in Silicon Valley really supported Trump, and actually they're outwardly hostile towards Trump. And so Trump is preparing a kill list of Silicon Valley executives with Jeff Bezos at the top, because he doesn't like him, and that's why now they've got the president-elect come on the wrong side, and he's going to punish them. So maybe that's why tech is going down as well, too. But nevertheless, there's been a gigantic rotation into what we refer to as the reflation trade. I thought Trump would win. I thought we'd get central bank panic. They would throw money at the market. That's why it would go up. Trump did win, and instead, the market decided that he's going to reflate the economy, and that's why we had the rally.
Well, as a result of the election, you can say Santa Claus came early this year with the Dow Jones Industrial Average at a record high. Markets doing well, going up instead of going down after the election. Joining us on the program is Craig Johnson from Piper Jaffray. Craig, it was rather interesting. If I'm sure you were watching an election like I was Tuesday night. And at one point, I can remember one of the anchors on the set saying, there's something going on here. And we had the Dow futures down about 800 points. But talk about a role reversal. The market took off in the opposite direction. It doesn't seem to have stopped. What's your take on the way the market sits currently?
Well, you know, Jim, we have been bullish on this market. We remain bullish and optimistic on this market, and we have not changed our year-end objective. We're still looking for 2350 at year-end on the S&P 500. That may prove to be a little bit optimistic, but directionally, we view that as the right direction. And in terms of the election, Jim, while it was a Santa Claus rally for some, others felt like they've got coal in their stocking, which has caused some disruption in the country. But overall, the reaction for the markets has been really two things for us. Number one, it suggests that there is a now shift in this country from a monetary policy to more of a fiscal policy starting to take place. And I would also just say, from the perspective of the White House now going Republican, Congress now going Republican. The second big thing for us is that there's been a mandate for change, and apparently change at any cost, given the candidate that has now been selected as the new president-elect. That being said, I think the policies and the fiscal changes are a little bit reminiscent to us of what happened in the early 1980s. And that was another great period of time where a new secular bull market was just getting underway and interest rates were coming down, gold had peaked, and equities were starting. And we didn't know it at the time, but one of the best secular bull markets in history. And I'm seeing a lot of parallels, Jim, to that period to where we are now, just opposite in terms of interest rates.
So right now, as you mentioned, Craig, you've got a switch from an emphasis on monetary policy to one of fiscal policy. But what about the repercussions of that in terms of inflation? We've seen a backup in bond yields here. We were at, what, roughly about 1.8% on election eve. We're roughly almost at 2.3%. So what's your take on interest rates and how would that affect your outlook for the market?
Well, I guess we could add that as a point number three, that the reflation trade is coming back. And similar to the early 1950s, we did have a period of time where interest rates were rising and equity markets were also rising and deflation was no longer an issue. As long as we see rates move up at a measured pace, I think the pace right now is a little strong, but as long as we keep seeing rates moving higher, we will see money eventually start shifting out of fixed income and into equities. And I think that will be one of the underpinnings and catalysts to take this market to even higher levels over the next couple of years. And Jim, I'd also just reiterate at this point in time that as long as we are below a 5 or 6% 10-year bond yield, we are in a secular bull market. And that will not end until we reach a 5 or 6% 10-year bond yield. And I think that's years away from happening.
Yeah, I know. There are others like Jeffrey Gundlach who are talking about 5 and 6% interest rates in the next 3 or 4 years. Craig, what about what we've seen is this rotation in the markets as a result of the election? And of course, everybody's trying to guess what kind of policy would favor what sectors under a Trump presidency versus a Clinton. You've seen a move in the industrial stocks. You've seen a move in capital goods stocks. Are you seeing this as confirmation in that trend? And of all the sectors that you follow, what sectors look the most promising to you at this point?
Great question. And I think this is kind of call it reflation trade 2.0, and tried to get started a year or so ago, and it stalled out. And I think now that we've got a clear mandate for change, a clear move toward fiscal policy changes in this country, I think the reflation trade and this move toward the cyclicals is a real move. Now, what I'm hearing from a lot of clients and a lot of customers is that they got caught sort of flat-footed coming into this election. They thought for sure that it was going to be a Democratic win in the White House and perhaps pick up maybe at least part of Congress. And that indeed wasn't the case. So there has been a very quick shift toward basic materials, toward industrials, toward financials. And I think it is a real move to pay attention to. And we've been seeing really the names in the tech sector come under pressure, specifically the FANG type stocks, Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, and Google. And the reason that has been is that those have been winners. And those winners have been a source of money for them to reallocate into basic materials, industrials, energy, and also financial sector.
So as we shift more towards this fiscal play that is widely expected, Craig, you and I know trying to get something through Congress is like a sausage factory. So even though the president will have a Republican Congress, which is to his favor, but even with his own party, you know, by the time it works its way through both houses of Congress, both parties, that takes a while. And even if they get passed, let's say he gets something passed in the first 100 days in office, it's going to be a while before that gets implemented into shovel-ready projects and spending.
You know, that is a very good point. And certainly the market is a discounting mechanism looking forward 6 to 9 months and kind of even beyond the 100 days. But I think piece by piece, you're going to start to see some of these changes get implemented. And one of the other tasks that'll probably be accomplished fairly quickly is a repatriation bill that could be put into place pretty quickly. I know both the Democratic Party and also the Republican Party have talked about that kind of repatriation bill. And under that scenario, a lot of money could be coming back to the U.S. out of Europe. And that certainly would be a positive for equity markets and companies paying dividends or maybe even special dividends and share buybacks. So I think the market is going to be pretty well, a pretty good bid to this market. And if 10-year bond yields keep climbing higher, I think you're going to start to see that natural rotation finally happen. Jim, you and I have been talking about that rotation for, oh, 3-4 years, and it looks to me like the conditions are right for that rotation to finally happen. And to me, today, it feels like the bond market is at the same point in time equity markets were at in 2000, and we're about to see that kind of longer-term secular shift take place. And just remind everyone that has listened to this presentation and my discussion on the show that 2.75 to 3% 10-year bond yield is really the inflection point that we need to keep our eyes on, because once we move above those levels, you reverse a 31-year downtrend in the 10-year bond yield here in the States.
So, Craig, like any kind of forecast, one of the things that we've seen this year is the markets have been taken by surprise. Number one, in terms of the outcome of this election. Number two, in terms of the direction of the market as a result of Trump's presidency. Is there anything that you could see that could go awry with your forecast? In other words, what could throw this off kilter? I mean, right now you're sticking as you were at the beginning of the year. In fact, you were the most bullish of the technicians that we interviewed at the beginning of the year. You had a 2350 forecast. You're sticking to that, which would be another 7.5% increase from where we are today. So that you're talking about a double digit return. So what, if anything, could go awry with this? In other words, what could cause you to change your mind?
Yeah, if there's two things that would keep me up at night and certainly temper the forecast that I have in terms of the S&P 500. The first would be I don't want to see the dollar really appreciate and start to meaningfully break out of this kind of 92 to 100 on the trade weighted dollar index. If we do see a meaningful breakout of the dollar, that's going to be a headwind for these large cap multinational companies. Something similar to what we had seen in late 2014 and into 2015, which caused kind of a temporary earnings recession. That'd be the first thing. The second item is if rates shoot up 100 basis points or maybe even a little bit more in a month or a 2-month period of time, I know we've gone 50 plus basis points in a week. If rates go up too quickly, we will see some liquidity problems in the fixed income market because those markets are already pretty thin. And then the risk managers will come to the conclusion that they need to take down risk for the house. And when they take down risk for the house, that will mean the selling of equities to really improve the balance sheet strength. So those are two things, Jim, that I'm watching carefully between here and year end. I know a lot of portfolio managers are playing catch up and they will be looking to buy the dips and they will be looking to reallocate into energy, basic materials, industrials, and financials, and money will come out of utilities and will come out of consumer staples and some of the other bond proxy surrogate areas like REITs too.
So we just talked about some of the negatives. Okay, let's talk about the positives. Let's say the market has it right, that we do not slip, that rates start to moderate and don't jump as high as they did, or at least so far, and don't continue that trend. What would you be looking for on the positive side? And if your target for this year is met, 2350 or close to it, what would you see happening as a result of all of this stimulus for 2017?
Well, from a bottoms-up perspective, earnings estimates are kind of in the low double-digit range for 2017. So we could see low double-digit type appreciation next year and not ask for any multiple expansion in 2017. So that would certainly be a starting point for me to think about 2017. I think other surprises or things we should be thinking about is what does any sort of repatriation bill look like? I know from folks that I speak to in Luxembourg and Brussels and in Europe and elsewhere, they're very concerned about a big repatriation bill. That would be a big negative for the financial services industry over there. Another item that I would be looking for going forward from here is I really want to see the makeup of what the cabinet is going to look like under the new President Trump's administration, to really get a feel for what the policies may be going forward. But I would also expect further discussion on potential tax cuts that I think would eventually be stimulating for the economy too.
So stimulative tax cuts and fiscal spending. But Craig, could we possibly see all that and have a jump in interest rates, just as we have seen here recently, where, you know, it's hard to believe we were at 1.32% in July of this year. And here we are on the day you and I are talking, we're almost close to 2.3. I mean, what happens if we continue to rise and we're at over 3% as we begin the new year?
Yeah, I think the absolute level for me is less important than the speed in which rates are rising or falling, because that's where a lot of money managers find themselves into trouble, is when you get these rapid shifts and adjustments that take place. I think after the taper tantrum event that had occurred several years ago, portfolio managers were kind of awakened to the idea that rates could be nearing an inflection point and may ultimately rise. And we've heard less discussion of any disruption in the market right now, given this kind of quick 50 and change basis point move. If rates keep going up at a nice constant moderate pace, I think that's fine. Everybody can adjust. Rates are still very accommodative based upon history. Mortgages and loans should not be unaffordable for people. It will pay a little higher in interest rates, but still it's not the same kind of rates you'd seen in the late 70s or the early 1980s. And again, the speed at which it changes versus the absolute level. And again, 5 to 6% 10-year bond yield is where I start looking at the end of the secular bull. But right now, we're a long ways and years away from seeing that happen.
So right now, given what you're saying, you're still anticipating and sticking to your target of 2350, which you admit may be a little bit more on the high side from this perspective, but certainly you're sticking to a number that's close to that. So whether it would imply, Craig, another 6-7% move in the markets as we move into the year end, what looks the most attractive from a technical and fundamental perspective at the things that you look at?
It's interesting is that with a lot of investors getting caught flat-footed for the basic materials and industrials and these sorts of areas inside the market, the steel stocks look like they've made a huge over 10-year double bottom. But I also point out that the airlines with any sort of tax cuts should benefit. And I'm seeing a nice downtrend reversal in a lot of the major airlines right now. I'm also seeing stocks like American Express, AXP, reversing downtrends and starting to turn higher. The regional banks also look constructive, breaking out. Some argue that they've perhaps gotten a little too far, too fast. But when I think about the setup for the banks going forward over the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years, deepening yield curve sounds like a great environment for them to see some net interest margin expansion for them. And I'd also say that where weakness for some sectors are going to come into play, I don't think the gold stocks are going to work. They've been among the best performing areas in the market this year. I think those are going to be a place to be taking money from. And I think some of the traditional staples type companies, whether it's like a Helen of Troy, whether it's a Campbell Soup or some of those kind of names, I think those are going to be areas that people are going to be rotating out of and then looking to put money into more of the offense of areas of the market versus those defensive areas that people have been in for a very long time.
Craig, what about the small cap sector? Because certainly in this rally, we've seen a lot of the small cap stocks do real well. If you had to play that sector, you mentioned airlines, and it was recently revealed that Berkshire Hathaway, which really surprised me coming from Warren Buffett, has taken a major position in some of the airlines.
I would say from the mid and small cap side of the world, the way we've seen the dollar strengthening, the way that we've seen that kind of move up in the dollar, I think is leading some investors to be concerned about the dollar strengthening too far, too fast, hurting the multinationals. And you've seen a double-digit return already in mid-smaller cap names. They did get beaten up the most, but they would certainly be the natural play for further strengthening in the dollar as more money is going to stay at home and, you know, more domestic type plays. Call it the Rust Belt type plays.
Well, listen, Craig, as we close, if our listeners would like to follow your work, tell them how they could do so, please.
Sure. They can go to the Piper Jaffray website, www.pjc.com, or they can reach out to their Piper Jaffray salesperson if they've got questions. And if they'd like to reach out to me directly, it's craig.w.johnson@pjc.com.
You're listening to the Financial Sense News Hour at financialsense.com.
If you're you're approaching retirement age or concerned about making plans for those retired years and having adequate income, you're going to want to hear our Lifetime Income series every Monday and Tuesday here at FinancialSense.com. Right now, here's a preview of this week's Lifetime Income program.
Joining me on the program is Carolyn Rosenblatt. She's an elder law attorney. Carolyn, it was amazing. This article on Barron started out with a family, I guess quite wealthy, somewhere in the neighborhood of $4 or $5 million. Seven children, two of the daughters had been divorced, and they were given power of attorney to take care of mom and dad. Well, mom and dad eventually developed dementia. In over a couple years, these two daughters took $700,000 out of the estate. The only way the other siblings found out was there was a $100,000 tax bill due on capital gains. But you deal with this all the time. Is this becoming more common? At least in my practice, I'm seeing more of it.
Yes, Jim, it is more common. Part of the reason for that is that people are living longer. And as they live longer, there is a steadily increasing risk of diminished capacity because of things like Alzheimer's disease and other problems. So we're all seeing more of it. And you know, the most recent study that I've seen, which was pretty comprehensive, puts the annual amount stolen from elders every year at $34
billion. $34 billion?
That's right. Over $34 billion, in fact. It's frightening. And that means stealing from every way there is. From predators on the internet to people who sell somebody a magazine subscription and then the elder doesn't want it and they don't know how to stop it, to errors in bills, to outright theft by adult children or other relatives who have access to the elder's account.
Well, the price of gold has fallen since President-elect Donald Trump won the election on November 8th, and speculation is growing. One reason is, well, maybe a stronger dollar and higher interest rates. Janet Yellen on Capitol Hill on Thursday hinting that she may be raising rates. How does this impact the commodities market, and gold especially? Joining me on the program is Dr. Keith Barron. Keith, let's begin with the price of gold as we speak. It has fallen. It's down about $4 an ounce. It was holding kind of steady there at $12.25 and had a drop after President-elect Trump won the election last Tuesday. What's going on with gold, in your opinion? How do you see this? And what's the take from overseas on gold?
Well, it's interesting what's happened because for, I would say, at least a month and or a month and a half, we were being told by the pundits that if Trump had won the election, that gold would go crazily upwards. And in fact, it did shoot up right after the election results were out. I think it went up 50 or 60 bucks. And then it precipitously dropped the next day and ended up almost 100 bucks down. And so, you know, this is really, really volatile activity. And what's going on here? Well, I think that to a certain extent, there were a number of programmed trades put in. If Trump should have won, they would have been buying because of what the pundits were saying and the expectation that it was going up. And then the financial media started to report that, seeing that he had won the presidency, he was talking about embarking on a lot of new projects to really refloat the economy and create jobs and do a lot of these projects that Obama had said were shovel ready and never really happened. Obama gave the excuse that he wasn't able to proceed with them because he was blocked by the Republican Party. But of course, now we're in a situation where Republicans control the presidency, the House, and the Senate. So I suspect that certainly early in Trump's administration, nobody's going to go rogue in the Republican Party and say that that they shouldn't be spending on these projects. I think that all the stops are going to be pulled out, and I think that we're in for the enormous helicopter drop of money that people have been talking about for well over a year as really the only last defense the Fed has against deflation. So I think that's what's going to happen here, and people are anticipating higher interest rates, and the Fed has been, I kind of ignore the Fed now because the Fed is like the boy that cried wolf. And every time they say they're going to put rates up, they don't, because the economy is a little bit too fragile. But eventually, you are going to see rates go up, I think. Now, the question is that a positive or a negative for gold? And I've been around long enough. I've been studying the gold market since I was a teenager, since I was 17. And, you know, Jim, and I'm sure you can remember, it's not too long ago when people would turn to gold as a hedge against inflation. And when people started to talk about higher interest rates, people would run to the gold window as a protection against inflation. And now things seem to be turned around because the financial media is saying, hey, gold is not going to pay you interest if you invest in it, so you're better off putting it into bonds or whatever and getting higher interest there. I think this is a temporary phenomenon. Remember, we've been at almost zero interest rates for quite some time now. And if we see inflation starting to gallop ahead, certainly people are going to run back to gold and silver in a very, very pronounced way. You know, if I was living in Venezuela, I'd sure love to have a nice supply of gold and silver at hand to buy groceries, you know, for the mess that the government has made of the currency. You've got a runaway inflation situation there. I don't expect runaway inflation to come into America for some time. I do think it's on the cards eventually. But, you know, we could see a situation where in the next year, the interest rates, the inflation rate is, let's say the inflation rate's maybe 3%, 4%, 5% as a result of the spending that goes on.
You know, one thing that really strikes me, Keith, is there are a lot of assumptions that are being made here, and you saw a lot of rotation in the markets. You have small cap stocks doing very well. You have the Dow doing real well on the expectation we're going to have tax cuts and this massive spending. But the realities are, as I look at this, I think this is the market front running a lot of expectations, because assuming Trump takes office, what is it, January 20th, first of all, to pass any spending bill, whether it's tax cuts or it's major infrastructure spending, is going to take 2 or 3 months to go through the sausage factory we call Congress. So that's going to take time to take place. And let's assume that, you know, he, with the Republican Congress, can get that through in his first 100 days in office. So by spring, late April or May, we actually have a bill. You know, Keith, just watching government over the years, it could be to the end of next year before that money actually begins to get being spent. In other words, they find the projects, the money is appropriated, but the actual getting money into the economy, this could take a whole year. So in many ways, I think this is the market front running a lot of expectations that may take a lot longer to realize than the market is currently pricing into these asset prices.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. This is completely overdone and really quite silly what's happened. The media has goosed this market, and it's just completely overheated. We've still got some time to go before the inauguration, so I think that expectations are going to come down. There'll be a reality check here. You know, obviously, Trump is a novice when it comes to politics. He's got to put all the civil servants in place to make things happen and get his cabinet appointed, and I believe he's got something like 4,000 different people to appoint. That's a huge number, and for somebody who's not a Washington insider, it's going to be difficult to assemble all those people in a heartbeat. It just can't be done. So I think that we're going to see expectations lowered and see a pullback in the markets in the next couple of weeks and months. You know, I think what's been happening with the broad market stocks and the indexes right now, the low interest rates have really added to the goosing of this market. And what's happened is that companies have been able to borrow money at very, very low interest rates and buy back their stock. And they buy back their stock, their share prices go up, the principals of the companies, the officers, and the directors are all being paid in stock options. And it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's a closed loop. So, you know, I think this is going to start to break down. But the reason that the stock market is where it's at now is got nothing to do with price-to-earning ratios. It's got to do with stock buybacks and goosing by the media.
And we see this any time. It could have been if Hillary Clinton or Secretary Clinton had won, you would see a lot of rotation. So a lot of this, to me, Keith, doesn't make a lot of sense, because even if, once again, if the president-elect was to get all his programs enacted, from tax stimulus to repeal of Obamacare to infrastructure spending to rebuilding the military, that's going to take 12 months down the road. Nothing happens overnight within government, and we know that this stuff takes time to run through the system. The question is, anticipating that, this is usually the strongest time of the year for gold. You have Christmas buying season for jewelry. You have the Indian wedding season that typically happens around this year. But so far, gold has been in a very narrow trading range. It hasn't been able to get much liftoff. And I just wonder, underneath the surface, does this have more to do with what's going on with hedge funds trading the paper market, long, short positions? Because typically, this is the time of the year you see a stronger gold market, but that hasn't taken place. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, certainly, I think that the volatility that we've seen in the gold market in the last week or two has been largely due to the paper market and the futures market. It's certainly not got much to do with physical gold. I think the physical gold demand is still fairly strong. And for instance, I'm sure you're very well aware of what's happened in India just very recently. They changed the currency overnight and got rid of the 500 rupee note and another larger note. I think it was maybe 1,000 or 2,000 rupees. And people were told that they'd have, I think, maybe 2 weeks to change their currency into the new currency. The government said this was a move to get rid of money laundering and kind of mafia money that was in the system. But really, it was an attack on black money, on people who are making money outside of the system where the government can claim the taxes. And so what happened is that people have turned to gold like overnight to make transactions and to store their money, because, you know, they don't trust the Indian government. You know, you can't trust the currency anymore. Is the Indian government going to do this again? Are they going to get rid of large denomination notes entirely? Who knows what's going to happen? But there's been a run on gold, and that the gold premiums in India have gone way up in the last couple of days. A couple of other things on the radar. One thing that's coming up very, very fast is votes coming up in Italy on December the 4th. And this will be a vote talking about the powers of the Senate. And if the vote doesn't succeed, the Prime Minister has said that he's going to resign. And then the next in line would be Beppo Grillo, the former Clowns Party. He would take over, he's not running things anymore, but his party would take over government. And they've stated that they're going to take Italy immediately out of the European Union. That's coming up. That could throw a lot of things into turmoil. Of course, we've had a lot of Italian politicians threaten to quit many, many times before. It seems like every Italian politician threatens to quit at one time or another. So maybe this is an empty threat. We don't know. But, you know, it's just part of the whole kind of genre I see almost around the world. It's like the Arab Spring, but in the West. It's throwing out the incumbents. And the media seems to be taken surprised by all this, by the Brexit vote, by Trump getting into office. I think the next thing we can expect the media to do a whole bunch of screaming and yelling and hand-wringing and all the rest of it will be with Angela Merkel's party getting tossed out of power next year. There were some early elections in Berlin earlier this year, and the media said that Angela Merkel's party was going to win firmly. because of the youth vote, and they ended up coming third. So this seems to be kind of a thing that's sweeping all through the Western world, throwing out the incumbents and going in new directions. We may see this with Marie Le Pen in France as well next year. So I think really what this spells, though, what this spells is a lot of turmoil in politics in Europe, and especially in the EU. And, you know, you've heard me speak on your program many times before that I think the EU is going to break up. I think it's going to happen sooner rather than later. I used to think that the catalyst was going to be the financial situation of the PIG countries, Portugal, Italy, Greece, and Spain, who have been fiscally in a mess and still are in a mess. The Italian banking system is basically bankrupt. But I think now it may be pressures from immigrants arriving from North Africa in Italy. And the Italians want these people spread amongst the whole of the EU nations. And both Poland and Hungary have said no, a firm no. They won't take anybody. And there were 6,000 people arriving every day on boats from Libya. There are still people today arriving. And this is going to provide yet another stress to the situation here in Europe. I was talking to a banker yesterday who thinks that 12 months from now, we could very well see the euro worth less than one U.S. dollar. And I wouldn't be at all surprised to see that happen.
Well, certainly, if you see that kind of cataclysmic event take place where you have more countries and the breakup of the euro, because, I mean, there are three major, well, maybe four currency blocks right now. You have the dollar, you have the euro, which was supposed to be a competitor to the dollar when it first came out, and it looked like that in the early part of the last decade. But since then, a lot of the unrealities of not having a fiscal policy coordinated with monetary policy are starting to now be reflected within the eurozone itself. So as more and more countries get out of that euro and it begins to break apart, that's going to create a currency turmoil. And of course, we know the ultimate currency is gold. Keith, I want to change topics if I can just a minute. You're very familiar with the industry. Given the downturn that we experienced in the last, let's say, 3.5 years, where gold actually got down to below 1,100 earlier this year, what's going on in the gold industry with the major players? I mean, you have Barrick, you have Newmont. A lot of these companies have shelved projects. They've closed them down, or they had projects that were just not completed because the economics weren't there to complete the project.
Yeah, well, we had a situation that maintained for about 10 or 12 years where the major mining companies had policies, internal policies, that they had to grow their resources, grow their reserves, and they had to be the biggest to be the best to attract the investment dollars, and especially to attract the dollars, the investments from the funds and the hedge funds and that, and the money managers. Well, you know, there was never any attention paid to whether those ounces were going to be profitable or not. And so the doo-doo hit the fan a couple of years ago, and we saw some major, major pullbacks and some mea culpas from some of the executives of major mining companies. We saw big, big project write-downs where projects were either written down or completely written off and abandoned as uneconomic or sub-economic. And so now we've emerged a couple of years after that. It's a much leaner business, I would say. The margins are much healthier, and they're now counting all-in costs. So not just the cost of mining an ounce of gold, but, you know, their front-end office cost, their administration cost, their cost of borrowing money, everything thrown in together, and now they're telling us, they're being honest about how much money they're actually making per ounce of gold. Some of them still have a way to go, like Kinross, but some of them have slimmed down really, really well and started to open new mines. Newmont's opened two new mines that look like they're going to be real winners, and one of them's in the U.S., one of them's in Suriname. And things are starting to pick up steam again from where they were a few years ago, when really there was nothing happening and a lot of retrenchment and a lot of complaints about, people weren't getting a fair price for their ounces. We've got a situation now where companies are starting to do exploration again. Even the junior sector is starting to move, though in a kind of a cautious way. And it's kind of two steps forward, one step back for the junior sector. But I think right now it resembles to me very, very much like the situation in 2002, 2003, when the last boom in the gold market just got started. So, we will see some discoveries made. But we do have a situation maintaining where there hasn't been sufficient exploration done in the last 10 years to sustain the production. And, just recently, there were articles published by Market Watch, by Bloomberg. The National Bank came out with something last year. I've been talking about a situation for peak gold now for 3.5 years. And it now really looks like the gold production is going to plateau sometime in the next 24 months, and then it's going to have a drop-off after that. Now, the big question is, what's going to happen to the price? How is this going to impact the price of gold? Well, if the Chinese and the Russians continue to buy that the way they've been buying, I would say that it's going to be a positive thing. I've been forecasting for a long time eventually there'll be a situation when somebody is going to take delivery on the COMEX and they're going to break the COMEX because there's just not enough physical out there to be found. Certainly this is going to impact the physical market, the amount of newly mined metal coming out of the ground and coming to market. So, you can't just push the envelope infinitely. At some point, you have to have the metal in hand.
Well, Keith, at this point, given where gold is, and as we mentioned, the market seems to be front-running a lot of speculation as to what may or may not occur with President-elect Donald Trump, what would you be doing here? Would you be buying bullion? Would you be buying, something like ETF in the gold market with stocks? What would you do?
Well, I think that everyone should have at least some exposure to gold, and really it depends on their financial situation. They have to take some advice as well, what percentage exposure that should be. I think a healthy exposure is a mixture of physical metal, mining stocks, and potentially ETFs as well. But I'm not going to say what I think the breakdown should be of those three. But certainly everyone, I think, should have at least some physical gold, some physical silver stashed somewhere for a rainy day. You just never know what's going to happen with the ETFs. And markets are volatile, and even gold mining shares are subject to ups and downs. And we've seen a lot of whipsawing just in the last week here with the mining shares. And I think you should just buy some physical and store it and really forget about it. It's an investment for the long term, not for a short term. If you want to make some hot money, it's not really the place where you should be. What I think is going to happen with the Trump presidency, well, that's an open question. I don't have a crystal ball, and I don't think anyone really knows what's going to happen here. But I think for sure there are going to be some changes, and it's not going to be status quo. And I would suspect that there is going to be volatility and upheaval. I think it's better, though, to look at the situation in Europe right now, and the potential for the European Union breaking up and the euro tossed into the dustbin. Jim, there's something very significant. You're phoning me. I live in Switzerland, and I was in Zurich yesterday, and the Union Bank of Switzerland, the UBS, stopped gold sales at their main branches in both Geneva and Zurich yesterday. They didn't give a reason for it, though it was reported in the press that they weren't making any money at it. I don't really believe that, because every time I went past the bank, you go in and you go to the gold window and you'd see a lineup that was often seven people deep, people who were waiting to buy gold. And in most cases, they had wads of euros that they wanted to change in the metal. And the way that the bank worked with their transactions, it was no questions asked. You turned over the cash and you got the gold and then away you went. So that's finished now. And I got to wonder, there seems to be a reason for everything that happens in the world. And did somebody pressure the bank to stop that? Certainly, I think if it was a decision, I don't believe that they were not making any money in gold sales, given the popularity of it. But this is the sort of thing that's going to happen. I think you'll see a lot of, maybe this is the smart money moving out of the euro and into other things, and especially gold.
All right. Well, listen, Keith, if our listeners would like to follow you, I know you have a website. Why don't you give that out, please?
Yeah, my website is straighttalkonmining.com. That's all one word. I don't often write because I run a couple of junior companies and I don't have the time, but I write when I can. And anybody who wants to have a look at the website, if they want to fire me some questions, I could do my best to give some answers.
Coming up next on the program, we are going to hear a lot about Trumponomics, and there is much speculation, indeed, in some quarters, especially among politicos in various parts of the world. There's even panic right now. But you know what the problem is? We don't really know what he's going to do, because there's a great difference between what politicians say during election campaigns and what they actually do. So what are the probabilities for Trumponomics? That seems to be what the market's reacting to. And what does that mean for investments and the markets in the future? All of that coming up next on The Big Picture as the Financial Sense News Hour continues at financialsense.com.